Israel, amrim Shema Israel.
And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel that they bring unto thee pure oil olive, beaten for the light, to cause the lamps to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation, and it shall be a statute forever in your generation.
The Eternal Light. The National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations present The Eternal Light, a program which comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Today's program, A Formal Accusation, was written by Peter Barry.
It is stated in the Talmud, when a man suffers through no fault or guilt of his own, he may consider his punishment a punishment of love, for as the Torah tells us, whom the Lord loveth, he chastiseth.
I doubt that there are many jokes about the legal profession that I haven't heard. And I have yet to hear one that's flattering to my colleagues, the lawyers of this world. I often have to remind myself that a lawyer framed our Constitution, another one preserved our Union, and a third, young and not yet so illustrious, acted as counsel for the defense in the case of the state versus Louis Gianetta. The third lawyer of mention was one Joseph Edmund Wilde, my own junior partner, and it gives me renewed faith in the integrity of my profession each time I remember him on that November morning in a hostile courtroom doing battle for what he knew was a dangerous and unpopular cause.
As much as I regret it, Your Honor, the prosecution leaves me no choice but to object again.
I must protest. I can't possibly present the state's case in the face of these constant and irresponsible objections.
I object to the prosecutor's objection to my objections. And I further submit that if the state's case requires that my client be browbeaten and intimidated, it might better remain unpresented.
The counsel for the defense is advised to spare the court the benefit of his observations.
Exception.
Noted. The prosecution may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. Now then, Mr. Gianetta.
Yes, mister.
I will repeat the question. And I remind you again that you're under oath.
Yes, mister.
Is it not true that until your arrest in the recent police raids, a gambling operation was conducted in connection with your business at 1721 Avenue D?
I don't understand you, mister.
You understand, don't you, that I have here the duly sworn affidavits of no less than 20 persons who placed bets on the numbers in your shoe repair shop?
Yes, mister.
Then answer the question.
But I try for answer, but you no let me. Maybe I tell you again what I said.
You will answer the question yes or no.
Objection.
Overall,
I must urge Your Honor to believe that this present question requires more than a yes or no.
I protest that the question is profoundly simple.
But it's not a profoundly simple situation.
Defense counsel will resume his seat.
I beg the court's indulgence. The fact is, a gambling operation was conducted on my client's premises, but my client did not conduct it.
I warn counsel that I will not tolerate any further interruptions, and I instruct the clerk to strike his remarks from the record.
Then I must instruct my client not to reply to the question.
It is imperative to the hearing that he reply.
Then it's imperative to the hearing that the question be altered.
Does the defense counsel have a recommendation to make along those lines?
Yes. I recommend that it be rephrased to discover if certain persons representing a criminal syndicate did not coerce my client into permitting his premises to be used for the very activity for which he's here on trial.
In short, He recommends that the state neglect to prove its case. No,
I urge that it be abandoned altogether.
And that your client be conveniently acquitted?
My client is innocent.
I propose to prove him guilty, as charged.
And if you do, if you contrive a case against him out of the meagerest letter of the law and convict him, what then? You'll have accomplished nothing more than the social and psychological degradation of a single, unlucky, commonplace citizen. But acquit Janetta. Acquit every Janetta. Say to the world that we know the trouble lies elsewhere, and the powers that be will have to dig deeper and yield up the actual masters of the network that has victimized my client and will continue to victimize thousands like him.
Touched as I am by my young colleague's eloquence, I submit that it's Louis Janetta and not some nameless syndicate that's here on trial.
And I submit that what's here on trial is this court of justice itself.
If the counsel for the defense wishes to be held in contempt, he is going about it most efficiently. Court is adjourned till 3 o'clock this afternoon.
Taking the case had hardly been a wise move for a young lawyer, and Joe knew it. It was November, near election. The administration was eager for quick convictions on its gambling racket's cleanup, and Joe knew that, too. But far and above more difficult for him, his decision had given rise to a family quarrel that had ended with his wife, Elaine, suddenly boarding a plane for a visit with her family in California. Still, he'd stuck to his guns, grimly involving himself with the work at hand, determined, resolute, and as unhappy as I'd ever seen him. He had smiled so rarely during the first 2 weeks of the trial that I was startled when I joined him in the taxi at the courthouse curb to find him bright and confident and quite himself again.
But, Bernie?
Yes?
That jury's mine.
Do you think so?
I know so. I'll win this case.
Can Janetta and I depend on that?
Mm-hmm, depend on it.
Morning, paper! Morning, paper!
Here you are, kid.
Right, mister.
Yeah, keep it.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Morning, paper! Morning,
Joseph?
Paper.
Yeah?
Before you bury yourself in the news, what did she say?
Who?
Elaine.
What makes you think I've heard from her?
Yesterday, my friend, you were a quiet, morose young man. Today, you seem sure of practically everything, including the fact that this is the best of all possible worlds.
And you've asked yourself what produced such a change, eh?
And I have answered myself. A letter from Helene.
Fairly amazing, my dear Sherlock. You're wrong in only one detail.
Oh, which one?
It wasn't a letter.
No?
No, telephone.
She called you?
Mm-hmm.
Where?
Yesterday.
Where?
Oh, it'd be a perfect afternoon if I didn't have to be in court at 3:30.
What's happening at 3:30?
Elaine's arriving at the airport on flight 16 from San Francisco.
The boy was in love, deeply and desperately, and I knew that it had taken the last ounce of his courage not to relent when the Janetta case had loomed as a shadow between them. It was a little after one when we reached the office. He was smiling, I remember, as he tossed his hat and paper onto the desk and buzzed for the secretary.
Yes, Mr. Wilde?
Will you come in for a minute, Miss Anderson?
Yes, sir.
Bernie?
Yes?
No, Bernie, I think a lot has happened to Helene.
Oh?
Yeah. Yesterday on the phone, she said, "I know now that I'm proud of you. What I felt before was small and grudging, and I'm glad to be done with it."
You remember, word for word.
The kind of stuff a man doesn't soon forget. Bernie, you know what I think? I think she ran away from herself and found herself running.
Thank God for it, then.
Yes. I have an idea he's been very good to us.
You want me, Mr. Wilde?
Oh, yes, Miss Anderson. I'd like you to take a taxi ride this afternoon.
Taxi ride?
Mm-hmm. Out to the airport. to meet Flight 16 at 3:30 our time.
Flight 16?
Mm-hmm.
If this is supposed to be a joke, I don't think it's a very funny one.
What, joke?
Yes.
What do you mean, joke?
Well, haven't you read your paper?
Paper? Paper? What's the matter, Miss Sanderson?
Well, who was on the plane?
His wife.
Wife? Mr. Wilde! Mr. Wilde, don't read it!
Joe. Joe, what is it?
Oh. Elaine.
He had dropped the paper. His face drained of blood. Before I could pick it up, he'd made a lunge for the telephone. And I stared, unable to believe a word of what I saw. Then the bold, black fatality of the headlines pierced through my bewilderment, and I felt my lips moving numbly as I read. Plane crashes in Nebraska mountains. Flight 16 from San Francisco lost in record snowstorm. By the time I was aware of the world around me again, Joe was shouting into the telephone.
Flight information. Flight information. Hello, flight information.
This is flight information, sir.
What about flight 16?
Well, sir, I...
Talk to me, will you? My wife's on that plane.
We're not in possession of much information, sir.
Can I go to her? Can I get to her?
I can't say, sir. The whereabouts of the plane haven't been established.
What has been established?
Well, there are 500 rescue craft combing the area, sir.
Are there any survivors? Can you tell me that?
No, I can't, sir. We lost their radio signal before they crashed, sir.
The voice continued talking on the other end of the wire, but Joe was no longer listening. His eyes seemed suddenly to have gone dead in their sockets, and he let Miss Anderson take the telephone from his nerveless fingers. Slowly, vacantly, he took his hat from the desktop and moved toward the door.
There'll be someone here, yes. Please let us know the moment there's a bulletin.
Where are you going, Joe?
I don't know.
Will you be all right, Mr. Wilde?
I can't say. No idea.
Perhaps you'd better go with him, Mr. Lewin.
No, please, no one. I want to be by myself. By myself.
I didn't dream. I mean, who could have imagined?
She called him yesterday. She was coming home.
I wondered why he looked so happy. So happy.
He was going to have you meet her. You'd have brought her to the courtroom. The moment he prayed for was actually coming.
Mr. Lewin?
Yes?
What's going to happen?
What worse can happen, my dear?
No, I mean about the trial, Mr. Janetta.
Janetta? Janetta?
What are you going to do?
I've got to talk with Joe.
But in the condition he...
It's his decision, Miss Anderson. No one else can make it. I suppose the barroom should have been the first place to look for a man so stricken. Knowing Joseph, it was the last. And when I found him, he was sitting, staring at an untouched glass, unable even to try to escape. It took all the strength and callousness in my nature to broach the subject, but it had to be broached. It had to be broached.
So?
I know how you feel. I know so well. I can't find words, but it's your case, boy. I have to leave it up to you.
Yeah.
Well?
Get an adjournment, Bernie.
Adjournment?
Yeah. A long adjournment.
Do you think there's any possibility he'll grant it?
You mind if I don't care?
I understand. Where you go from here?
Home, I guess.
Stay there, will you?
Mm-hmm. If I can.
I'll talk to the judge. I talked to the judge, but before I'd said five words, I knew there wasn't a chance in the world.
Mr. Levin, I have the deepest sympathy with your partner's grief, but there are specific obligations which conflict with any desire I might have to oblige him.
Such as?
Why, my obligation to uphold the interest of the prosecution.
Have you any obligation to Mr. Janetta, Your Honor?
The motion for adjournment is denied. The court will convene at 10 o'clock tomorrow morning, at which time the defense counsel may either appear or supply a substitute attorney.
He knew as he said it that there wasn't another attorney in the state who would touch the Janetta brief. He knew that it would end with the court appointing some makeshift, inadequate representation for the accused. But he was acting within the letter of the law, and I could do nothing but thank him for allowing me to be heard and make my way back with the news. Joe stood looking out at the darkness beyond his apartment windows. And when I'd finished reporting, I wasn't at all sure he'd heard me. A clock in the bedroom ticked the minutes away, and another clock somewhere out in the gathering night tolled the hour before he finally spoke.
Call Hanlon.
Arthur Hanlon?
Yes, he's a good man.
A good machine man. He'd laugh in my face.
Oh, what about Moffat and Levy and Webb? They couldn't say no to you.
They wouldn't, but they'd find an out. No use turning to them.
Well, so who?
I honestly don't know.
Turn to yourself then, Bernie.
Are you suggesting that I go in?
Well, only if you want to.
I'd want to if I could handle it, but I can't. And you know that as well as I do. It's a job for a young man, a strong young man with fight in him.
If you're implying that I should stick it out,
Joe, if you could.
I can't.
Not possibly.
Well, why should I? What does it mean to me now?
What does Mr. Janetta mean to you?
Nothing. As far as I'm concerned, he no longer exists.
But he does exist. That's the whole point.
Not from where I sit. The real point is that I no longer believe in the classic joke of right and wrong.
What do you believe in, then?
It's not a question of belief. It's conviction. There's injustice in the weave of things, I tell you. That's the bitter final fact.
You've had a very bad day.
You're not so bad that I don't know what happened to me.
What happened was a tragedy, my boy. But an injustice.
You're going to tell me I deserve this?
Will you tell me who has been unjust to you?
Who?
I demand a name.
All right, I'll give you a name then. God himself has been unjust to me.
I see. You're a good lawyer. A good, reasonable lawyer.
And beyond the reach of flattery.
I am not trying to flatter you, my boy. I am asking you as a good and reasonable lawyer to state your case against God.
What? Look, I'm in no mood for jokes.
Nor am I.
What do you want from me?
A formal accusation.
All right. I accuse him of murderous negligence. Will that do, Counselor?
Not until you've specified the charge.
I think the details are self-evident. He let her get on that plane, didn't he?
You offer that as good and sufficient ground.
Yes.
Then I institute a counter-accusation.
Counter-accusation?
I accuse you of murderous negligence.
What are you talking about?
You also let her get on that plane.
Are you losing your mind, Bernie?
Is that the best defense you can make?
Defense?
Would she have gotten on it if she had never gone away?
What are you driving at?
Would she?
No.
Then why did you let her?
Leave me alone.
You could have stopped her. You could have yielded to her. Persuaded her.
Yes, I could have tied her to the bedpost.
And she'd be alive today if you had. Why didn't you?
Are you kidding me? Did I know there was going to be any danger?
Of course you knew. There's danger in all freedom. Did you have a guarantee that no plane would fall, no train would crash, no boat would sink?
You're trying to drive me crazy.
Irrelevant. Why did you let her go?
Because she wanted
you
to.
You offer this as an answer?
Are you telling me I should have deprived her of her freedom?
I submit that you could have.
But I couldn't.
Why not?
Because I loved her.
And that wasn't unjust of you?
Unjust of me to have loved my own?
You are calling it unjust of God to have loved his own.
What are you saying, Bernie?
Nothing that is beyond you, Joe. Only that he loves man as you loved Helene.
That I doubt.
How can you, when the similarities are so great?
Similarities?
You chose not to restrict her. He chose not to restrict us, nor to manacle our spirit to the tyranny of any forces save our own will, despite all peril and all consequence.
It was a pretty deadly choice.
It was a dangerous choice. There is a zone of hazard in every path of freedom, my boy. But if it were removed, the common freedom of the living would vanish with it. Believe me, we could only have been safe as Helene could have been, tied to the bedpost of controls and limitations. And he knew this in the hour of our creation, and at stake was the free, unlimited flow of human growth toward its ultimate potential. And he knew this to be worth every risk involved.
Pretty grim, the risks he ran.
It was a great gamble. But in his love, he took it. And in his love, he created man free.
In his love.
Too bad in his love he didn't create man without a capacity for grief. That would have been some evidence of loving kindness.
I'm not sure all men would want it so.
I'd want it so.
You would? He could have made you that way. It's true.
If only he had.
As insensitive as a stone. Inert, static, without sorrow or feeling.
Well, why didn't he?
Nothing would have bothered you ever. But then you couldn't possibly have loved her.
Not have loved her.
A stone lacks love as well as grief, my friend. Your love came of the encounter of two free spirits. Would you relinquish that encounter, Joseph? Would you cancel it out?
No, no.
Then withdraw your accusation and be content.
Content?
If you cherish the fruits of your freedom, shall you not bear whatever losses it involves?
But I can't bear this loss. A marriage, half formed, just beginning.
Your marriage, Joe, had blossomed to full flower.
What are you talking about?
Its one purpose was her emergence into an understanding of herself and you, of the significance of your relationship and of the world. She might have stayed and lived, but in her freedom she chose to run. And running, she found herself, and the miracle of growth occurred. She made the grade, Joseph. Be glad she made it.
How can I be glad?
She probably lived more in her few hours of realization than she would have otherwise in a century.
What about me? What about all the endless, empty future? If only I'd done something to deserve such punishment. I'd feel better if I had.
You'd feel worse, not better.
Well, at least I'd have found some logic in this misery.
You needn't seek a logic, Joseph. It's written in the Torah for you.
In the Torah?
Clearly. It says, whom the Lord loveth, he chastiseth. Let that suffice you, my boy. Take courage.
Oh, how can I? Her life was all I lived for. How can I go on without her?
Who says you need to?
She's dead, Bernie.
Yes. Yes, she's dead. But her life is like a great work of music, which doesn't end when the composer dies. Her life is such a work. He turned away to the window again, but somehow I felt that the hand of doom had relaxed its grasp. After a time, a night breeze stirred the curtains, and he squared his shoulders and took a deep breath. Next morning, when court convened, Janetta sat and blinked in bewilderment at Joe's empty chair.
Has the counsel for the defense supplied a substitute attorney?
He has not, Your Honor.
Then the court will proceed to appoint representation for the accused.
That will not be necessary, Your Honor. The counsel for the defense will continue to represent his client.
And he did. And the trial was a long and arduous uphill fight. But Joseph and Justice both prevailed, and Janetta was acquitted. A week later, Helene's belongings were delivered to her husband. Among them was a diary, the last entry midway the pages. It was imagination and nothing else, but as I read the words, I seemed to hear her voice again, clear and young and vibrant.
I've just talked to Joe on long distance. I wanted to make him understand what I feel now. All that I've learned in the weeks between. But I'm afraid I didn't quite manage to put it into words. It's not easy to express yourself when your heart is full. But I won't give up trying. In a few minutes now, I leave for the San Francisco airport. And perhaps if I think of nothing else during the long journey ahead, I may be able to say it all by the time I see him again.
If you would like a copy of today's script, please send your name and address with 10 cents to cover the cost of postage to the Jewish Theological Seminary of America, 3080 Broadway, New York 27, New York. And now we take great pleasure in presenting Mr. David Borowitz, chairman of the Combined Jewish Appeal for Chicago and member of the Board of Directors of the Southside Hebrew Congregations. Mr. Borowitz.
We have just heard a moving story about a man who, in the middle of a heroic and selfless fight for justice, was dealt a stunning blow which threatened the central basis of his existence. The person he loved most dearly in the world was suddenly and without known cause taken from him. No wonder that he doubted the nature of God's justice. As tragedy strikes, we all react with anger against the need for suffering. The Bible says that whom the Lord loveth, he chastiseth. How many of us can listen to these words and find comfort in them when we are desolate with grief? Yet, somehow Joseph Weil listened, and in listening, he understood what the Talmud meant when it says that when a man suffers through no fault of his own, he may consider suffering a punishment of love. The deepening of Joe Wild's insight gave him greater understanding of the works of God's universe, and he was then able to withstand his difficulties and go on. For he understood that God, in his love, made man free, free to feel the wonderful thrill of creation, but on the other hand, free also to make mistakes and suffer the anguish they entail. There's another lesson in today's story as well. The striving for justice is a constant theme in the Bible. In the book of Deuteronomy, it says, "Justice, justice shalt thou pursue." We are also told in the Talmud, "The world exists for three things, justice, truth, and peace." But the pursuit of justice is not easy. Sometimes it threatens our security and comfort. Sometimes it causes such severe unpleasantness that it is tempting to give up and let the world go its way. Yet, we cannot give up. We have no choice unless we are willing to relinquish all the moral value of life, but to accept the struggle and engage in the Herculean task of bringing the world closer to the ideal of justice. We have no choice but to go on as Joe Wild did, accepting life as it is, accepting the consequences of our freedom, and do whatever we can in the cause of the right. And if we do, the final triumph of justice is assured.
Thank you, Mr. Borowitz. Our eternal eye drama today, A Formal Accusation, was written by Peter Barry. Cantor Robert Siegel sang the liturgical introduction. Featured in the cast were Alexander Scourby, Edwin Jerome, Julian Noah, Guy Sorrell, Norman Rose, Louis Sorin, Michael O'Day, Mary Jane Higby, and Lola Pizer. This is Mel Brandt. The music was composed by Morris Momorsky and conducted by Roy Shield. This has been an NBC Radio Network production directed by Daniel Sutter. This weekly program is presented under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. This is the NBC Radio Network.